Councillors, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. It's 5:30, so I'll declare our meeting open. I'd first of all really like to thank the Mutumbing community and in particular the Hall Committee for making us feel welcome. And I'll apologise on behalf of our engineering department. We obviously need to give someone some spelling lessons, don't you, Mr. Williams? Just remember, it's Mutumbing, you're making bang bang. I'm assuming locals have noticed the variable message board that has Mutumbing misspelled. We apologise for that. Thank you also to whoever was responsible for the catering. It's one of the reasons councillors like coming out here, I think. We don't get that at the chambers. I'd like to first of all acknowledge the Gundangia people who are the traditional custodians of this land. I pay respect to elders, past and present, and extend that respect to any Aboriginal people present. And tonight, this evening, I would also like to ask everyone, would they please stand and observe 1 minute silence in remembrance and recognition of the loss of our sitting councillor, an elder and a respected Gundangia man, Councillor Trevor Barangay. Thank you, everyone. I also need to remind everyone that this meeting is being webcast, so those in attendance should refrain from making any defamatory statements. And I'd ask if you have your mobile phone with you, would you please turn it to silent? And I'll call for apologies,
Jeff. I think Councillor Mayor, I have apologies from Councillor Wilson, Councillor Susan Pendies.
Thank you. And do we have Major Sandcroft Brown present? Welcome. And the Major is here from the Salvation Army and he's here to offer a prayer on behalf of the Mbatha-Bali Ministers Association. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's pray. Holy and gracious God, we thank you for this beautiful valley. We are blessed people and we recognise that. And we thank you that we can live here in freedom and we ask that you will guide us as we seek to live in harmony with all people and with the land itself. I do thank you for our council. I thank you for our mayor. And I pray that you'll be with her and her fellow councillors as they consider matters that are important to our community. I pray that you'll give them wisdom and discernment as they take the lead in so many matters that affect us. So we ask for blessing and guidance on them and that you will be with them. In fact, we ask, Lord, that you'll bless us all and keep us in your care. We pray this believing that you're the God who answers our prayer. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Thank you. Thank you, Manager. Do you have any disclosures of interest?
No, Madam Mayor, I actually no disclosures of interest.
Thank you. Councillors, confirmation of the minutes from the ordinary meeting of the 29th of February. Move Councillor Buchanan, seconded Councillor Trevor Ballengarry. Are there any corrections to the minutes? Sorry, Councillor Martin Ballengarry. Are there any corrections? None? Those in favour? Against? Harry? We have one notice of motion, which is on page 9 of your business paper. I'll formally move that. Seconded Councillor Angel. Councillors, I didn't feel comfortable having to put up this notice of motion at this particular point in time, but if you've read the background, you'll understand that there are actually statutory obligations that we have in relation to Councillor Trevor's passing. Is there any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Okay, now we go straight to our public forum, and we have a number of speakers tonight, and the first is Ms. Gwen Green. Gwen is the president of the Utungan Community Centre Committee of Management. Thanks, Gwen.
I'd just like to welcome the mayor, the councillors, and all the friends, and all the friends that I haven't met yet, to our wonderful hall, and it's lovely to see all the smiling faces. Okay, thank you. I'd like to hand over to Paul now.
Thank you very much, Gwen. Our next speaker is Mr. Paul Shadell. And Paul is going to address Council in relation to the history of the Utungan Community Centre Committee of Management.
Thank you very much, Honda. Thank you, Green, and good afternoon to one and all. I'd also like to start today with our welcome to country. The Utungan Hall Committee acknowledge the traditional owners of this land, pay our respects to all past, present and emerging. We offer our sincere condolences to the family of the late Trevor Ballengarry, our representative on council for this hall, and thank him for his services to our hall, the wider community and the Gumbengi people of our valley. We, the residents of Utungan, also acknowledge and thank past trustees, committee members and custodians of this facility for administering and maintaining this hall over the last 110 years for future generations to enjoy. We would like to welcome and thank Mayor Rhonda Hoban, councillors and staff of the Buckinghamshire Council for their past and current contribution to restoring and preserving our beloved hall. We also thank Pat Monaghan and Michael Kemp, our members of federal and state parliaments, for the grants that make this upgrade possible. Also the work and support of locals to administer this project, other stakeholders, and not forgetting the tradesmen, Jason the Builder, Jamie the Sparky, and others for their excellent workmanship and respect for this building's heritage. For the past 110 years, this hall has been the focal point of our community. Its existence today makes us not just a part of the Nambucket landscape, but gives us our own special identity, the land of many frogs. We are Utunganese, and a badge we wear with pride for the community that we are. The lives and memories of many generations who have passed before us are encapsulated in the walls that surround us. This hall was their gathering place for entertainment, friendship, connection, and knowledge sharing as it is today. More importantly, it is a shrine to the memory of the many residents who have served our country in theatres of war. The unseen faces who look down on us from the back of this hall will forever be a reminder of what makes us a community and how sacred the land we live on is to us as it was to them. It is our wish that this meeting tonight is mutually respectful, has beneficial and meaningful dialogue, achieves positive outcomes for all, and acceptance that small rural communities such as Yutungan are part of the cornerstone of our society and what makes us Australians. As such, they need to be fostered for the future. Thank you.
Thank you, but I just need to check, do any councillors have any questions for the speaker? No? Thank you. Thank you, Paul. And our next speaker is Mr. Gary Lee, who is part of the Tungan Community Centre Committee of Management. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and councillors, and thank you, Gary, friends and friends of Katanga. My name is Gary Lee, and I'm a retired New South Wales police officer, having served the community for 32 years, and former OIC of the Maxwell and Kempsey Police Station. I've been associated with Katanga for 50 years. I live on our family farm at Morris Creek. The hall commenced in 1908. We've got a fairly good history. And Mr. Patrick Grant, architect and grazier of Yutungan, on the 9th of October 1909, approached the local member to see if land could be made available for community use. There was a hall at Frank's Wharf, 2 miles closer to town. However, the owner put too many restrictions on the hall for social purposes. So the Yutungan community decided to build their own. The only problem was to get a government surveyor to survey an area. The community was told that if residents would pay half the cost, then the surveyor would come and do the job. But the work to get allocated would cost the community half of whatever the survey cost was. So the community in 1909 raised £1.16, about £3.65, and paid for their share. The New South Wales Government Gazette, published on the 28th of April 1972, to the allocation of the Yutungan Community Hall, was stated that on the 20th of October 1910, the hall was deemed a reserve, and then a reserve on the 11th of August 1915. For the separating of the two parcels of land, the government made a precedent, and it was set and allocated the land for public use. Mr. Robert Ward, a local, became a trustee of both parcels of land until his passing, and Mr. John O. Johnson was appointed as a trustee on the 28th of April 1972. If John O's here, I acknowledge him because he's the past and last trustee other than council, and he worked for the council for 41 years, and he's only a sprightly 81. The land was vested to the Nambuckashire Council on a Government Gazette number 41 on the 24th of March 1976. It referred back to issues of 1910 and 1915. Mr. Johnson and the committee had to step aside, and both areas vested in the Nambuckashire as trustee. The both parcels are still, and the land is still, to be used for public use. Now, if we step back to 1916, Yutungan Hall opened. The community used the hall for church services and then adjourned to the recreation reserve to play tennis and use the barbecues and enjoy leisure time. Community raised funds and built the hall run by the Yutungan Progress Association. In 1938, Yutungan Hall Committee had to be incorporated until 1976. In those previous years from 1910, the reserve was established. And in 1915, two clay courts for tennis and cricket were used with timber pole uprights and material sides to stop tennis balls getting lost. This construction was donated by locals and erected by the same volunteers. These courts were used and the barbecue area set up, plus parking. Historical documents show many years of lobbying for toilets, water tank and shelter, and for community use. This was not realised since that date. In 1993, an Aboriginal lands claim was issued for the reserve and all locations. However, with legal arguments and confirmation by council, all residents, community and visitors to the area are able to use the reserve and enjoy the privileges of the community used as set out in Government Gazette 1911. Through community support and donation from Mr. Swan, a resident in 1993, the community erected a steel fence for the tennis court to replace the old wooden one. The RFS shed was established on the reserve in 1993 and further recreational facilities required. Area assistance scheme from New South Wales Government was applied for in 1994 and 1995. These failed. So Mr. Alan Ward, a local, being a concreter, with local residents and volunteers, laid the tennis court as it is today. A DA was issued for the works on the reserve, however grants were not forthcoming, the DA was incomplete. A major windstorm in 1995 flattened the new fence at the reserve, and the council had a tree and three damaged panels removed as it was a danger and the court was non-functional. Around 2013, council removed the tennis court fencing and the community thought it was going to be re-established, but it wasn't.
Gary, you've got to go. Just I need to get a resolution.
Oh, sorry, you haven't got one.
Moved Councillor Lance, seconded Councillor Angel for an extension of time. Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Sorry.
Thank you. Local residents from 1970, 80 and 90 have requested assistance with wish lists for the community, and it's very humorous that each committee have over the years have asked the same thing for help from council, for grants to improve the hall and reserve recreation. Mr. Alex Donnelly, a resident, he was president in the 90s and asked the same questions and sent plans and information as every committee does. The areas are to extend our hall out, that area up there, to make better seating, to have indoor at floor level toilets, a large water tank out the back, at the rear, in ground with services at the roadway for RFS to fill their tenders in bushfires if needed, plus improvements to the reserve for our youth. Now the youth of the past are our elderly today, who still need the services in this area, and I'm one of them. These issues are not new. In research of this historical records, this has been going on as a 60-year campaign. Moving forward, 2023 saw a vibrant 355 committee for the hall and a 355 subcommittee for the recreation centre to take on the challenges. 9 new committee people from Mutungan residents. We discussed the upgrade of the hall and it was straightened and repaired, the white ants evicted and the possum relocated. But at the second meeting, issues were starting to gather. We needed inside toilets, an extension to the side, and a bigger storeroom. We needed a water tank, as our 5,000 litre tank was rusted out and unserviceable, and the 2,000 litre one at the back was moved to the front of the building, so at least we had some water. We're fundraising for a larger tank to service the toilets, new kitchen, plus the hall's a safety house for emergencies. This reminded me of a movie, Groundhog Day. Keeps happening, nothing changes. The committee invite the councillors and council to have a site inspection of the reserve and discuss all options for the future, both for the reserve and for the hall. The kitchen upgrade and renovations at present is a blessing to the committee and community, and they are thankful the council put in so much energy into our hall. It's the first new kitchen in 110 years. Oh, there's been repairs, donated kitchen sections, but this is a purpose-built area. The new kitchen and stage one appliances will be great, and the committee wishes to thank on behalf of the community for the council support. We're hopeful for New South Wales Government grant to be announced in May 24 for finances to finalise the kitchen. This will service the community in the future and supply a facility and asset for the Embarkershire and the Lemaka Valley. The money to be raised from future catering and hall hires will go towards ongoing costs to run this facility. Fundraising will continue in our efforts for future planning of the hall and rec centre. We now need support to get funding to re-erect the tennis court fence. The committee purchased from the old Karanga Community Hall in November for $500. It's worth over $20,000, so as we're not allowed as committee and volunteers to erect it, we're to start playing tennis, basketball and other activities like our forefathers and mothers in 1908. We still seek the assistance from council to budget now and the assets department to ensure for an allocation in the budget for the reserve. Then the committee will seek to get grant funding together with recommendations of council, both tiers of government, to see necessary community services restored and secured in the Yutunga community, because this is a valuable asset which we will see well into the future. I thank you and look forward, as all the committee and the community members here, in working with council to fulfil the well-being of this community together. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Our next speaker is Mr. Doug Urquhart, and Mr. Urquhart is addressing council in relation to a letter penned in 1991 and conditions of Bow Harbour Bridge. Welcome.
Thank you, Rhonda and councillors, and welcome everyone to our hall. Gary, in his time, his spare time, which he seems to have a lot of these days, running through records, found this letter that I penned to council in 1991. Now, I think when I look at it, there might have been a bit of prodding towards me from Cactus. Those of you who are, well, what am I saying? Unfortunate enough to know Cactus, or yeah, he would sort of get things going. And if it was something that was worth working towards, he'd be on to it. Those that don't know, you're probably lucky. But anyway, just what Gary was saying about the facilities, the cricket pitch, as it was put in, is still in existence on my property down here, down towards Boat Harbour Bridge. So in the middle of the paddock down there, if you drive past on the left-hand side as you're going towards Taylor's Arm, you'll see a heap of timber stack there, which has been cut and stacked for probably 15 or 20 years. That's sitting on a cricket pitch. That's where it was, the timber was built on that cricket pitch. So anyway, just onto this letter. So I wrote it to Tom Port in, when was it, the 19th of the 3rd, 91. So it's getting back a few years. But anyway, I'll read it verbatim. Tom Port, Shire Clerk, Council Chambers, Maxwell. That's all we needed as an address in those days. Dear Tom, I'm writing with reference to the proposed urban and rural land release strategy. Firstly, let me say that I have only viewed the maps and have not read the documentation. You'll have to excuse me with this because it's my handwriting and it's a copy, so I'm struggling with it a bit. It wasn't computer generated in those days. Secondly, I'm in two minds about the whole plan. My initial reaction on viewing the plan was that a feeling of discrimination. Discrimination in that if you don't have a councillor living in your area, the area misses out altogether, as the Yutungan area has. Maybe the old system of ridings would see a fairer and more equitable representation of the constituents of the Shire. The Yutungan area already has a basically well-developed infrastructure of roads, school buses, mail supply and so on. Some of the proposed areas that have poor road systems, which will obviously have to be upgraded. The question here is upgraded at whose expense? That of the developer, a percentage of cost no doubt, or that of the ratepayer? My studies of urban demography geography many years ago covered a theory which was proposed by an academic consultant by the name of Chrysalis. I think that's how it was spelled. That's the spelling I put in there. This theory of development, which incidentally stated that the test of time and was shown to fit most city, town, village situations proposed that all development took place on a circular fashion, like a pebble in a pond, away from the central business district. There are, of course, areas which for geographical reasons this cannot happen. Surely this would have been a fairer, simpler and cheaper way of proposing the development instead of the unfair situation which obviously exists in the proposed plan. My view is that everyone within a certain radius of the town where the country is suitable be entitled to have the chance to subdivide if they desire to do so. NB, I have no desire to subdivide at this time, but probably in the future when my children may need some support. It would be nice. It would be nice to know that the land could be used how I would like it to be. On the other hand, the advent of small developments or subdivisions selling for many times what comparable acreage within that individual block may bring must eventually force up evaluation, and therefore, in the long run, rates must also rise. Hopefully, the situation will not arise where people who do not want to subdivide will be forced to subdivide because of increasing rates. Which don't reflect the value of the land and its productivity, only what people are prepared to pay for it. There have been several people in this area requesting a public meeting, possibly at Yatungan, to discuss the problems they see in the plan. What's the chances? Anyway, a few points for your consideration, with no doubt you will probably have seen previously. Yours faithfully, Daruka. I can't even remember what the original plan was now. So it's that long ago. But anyway, apart from that, the other thing I was going to mention was I don't know how many of the councillors have actually been down and had a look near the Boat Harbour Bridge, back this side of the Boat Harbour Bridge on my property. I no longer have access to that area near the bridge because the bank is washed away. It's almost washed to the fence. And I would say there is one section there where that bank is within a metre of the road. I know a couple of blokes have worked for council and seen it and are really concerned about it. I have my concerns. I think if we get another wet season like we had in 22, that road will go, and Fraser Donnelly's new yards and everything on the northern side of the road, they are all going to have to be moved. Because that whole thing is going to just keep moving. There's probably a bank there which would have to be 30 foot high, almost straight down, so my cattle can no longer get around there down to the bottom of the flat. The other thing I was quickly going to mention, just before I go, if Rhonda doesn't wrong me out.
Well, I'm giving you an automatic extension because of the technical difficulties.
Thank you. It was just the responsibility of roadside maintenance. This is probably the fourth time, I think, at a council meeting I mentioned this now. But after the bushfires, during the bushfires, it showed how much we needed that distance between the road and the landholder's fence be maintained. Because the photographs that I saw from drone work, it showed where the fire had spread in Tauranga, and here the fire had spread all the way along the road and shot straight along the side of the road against the fences. And now we only get probably a metre or so of the road slashed. I used to have that road down on my place looking like a bowling green. I stopped doing it because our shire engineer many years ago, Walt Kelly, who some of you would know, came along one day and he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Clean up the place." And he said, "Don't do it. Don't do it." He said, "If you put a stone through a car windscreen, they roll the car and finish up in a wheelchair." He said, "Irrespective of what insurance you've got, it's not going to be enough." I said, "Look, I've got a $20 million indemnity on this." He said, "It won't be enough. Don't do it." And I said, "In that case, will you make sure that the road is maintained?" He said, "Yes, we will." That lasted 2 years, and then there was no more after that. Now all we get to strip about a metre wide is that. So it's, yeah. I would like to know if we are allowed to do it. Like,
Can you do it? Are we going to be in Devon for it? What's going to happen to it? So, yeah. Anyway, thanks very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. And, oh, sorry.
I'm told this should be working now.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Roper? No, thank you, Doug.
Just as well.
Our next speaker is Ms. Julie Hooch, and Julie is speaking on behalf of Roads Action Group to give an update. Thank you, Julie.
Madam Mayor, councillors and management, I appreciate the opportunity to address council on behalf of the Road Action Group, which is known as RAG. The Road Action Group was formed in 2022 and represents the outer area communities within the Nambucca Valley. RAG's focus being improving communication between the council and community, transparency and road maintenance. The roads are essential to these communities, whether sealed or unsealed. The group has met with management on many occasions and are pleased to see that eventually some areas are being serviced. However, there is still a lot, somewhat further to go. We have continuing concerns with the local servicing of roads throughout the Nambucca Valley. Taylor's Arm Road is the longest arterial road in the Nambucca Valley. It services the area of Thumb Creek, Burrapine, Medbay, Taylor's Arm Village, North Bank, Bakers Creek, Grace Crossing, Yarranvale, Talarm, which includes Rogers Creek and Rains Creek, Road Harbour, Utungan, South Bank, Mars Creek, Gould's Road, Ward's Lane, Ward's Road, and part access to North and South Congaree. It is a major daily route for the marketing of produce from the dairy, beef, fruit, vegetables, and other agricultural industries, as well as access to essential operational services to all other agricultural and non-agricultural industries. There are four school buses feeding the schools in Medlow and Maxwell schools, as well as the connection to Hops and Kempsey School. The other major user of the road is tourism. We acknowledge that with such a wide area and with the bushfires and flood after flood, natural disasters occurring affects the maintenance and replacements of infrastructure. However, with major landscape projects still outstanding at Congaree and Red Hill on Taylor's Arm Road, and numerous others across the valley, and with no community communication on any progress, it is difficult for the communities to be prepared for further closures due to expansion of slips on future wet, severe wet seasons. Residents have reported to RAG the maintenance of unsealed roads such as North Bank Road and Taylor's Arm have been carried out to a high standard, with a couple of exceptions which were reported on Antenna and have since been fixed. RAG would strongly advise community members to use the Antenna app to report road issues. RAG is concerned that staff is not providing feedback to the Antenna reports. The maintenance of Nambucca Valley Council roads and safety and the duty of care remains a serious concern to RAG, not only the Taylor's Arm Valley but the whole of the area. Communication on works progress on major projects is essential to all. RAG appreciates the General Manager keeping the channels of communication open for local service to both sealed and unsealed roads, as well as monitoring decaying bridges and culverts. RAG has a regular meeting with the General Manager. I would encourage concerned ratepayers to use and road users to join the RAG group. If anyone is interested in joining, please let me know. And we would also strongly suggest that you use the Antenna app to report issues on the roads. It does help. Thank you.
Councillors, are there any questions for Ms. Gooch? No? Thank you. We need to make a note next time, bring the hospital with us. It helps so that speakers aren't trying to juggle pages and the microphone and speak. Anyway, we have one final speaker, and that is Rayla Mackey, and she would like to address council regarding chemical use on the road.
Thank you, Mayor. afternoon, Madam Mayor, General Manager, councillors, council staff, Yutungan and visitors. For several weeks, Marcel and I have watched our neighbours spray chemicals to kill the grass at the edges of almost 40 hectares of blueberry mounds. The grass around the group of rows directly in front of our house, about 30 metres, is completely brown, poisoned, dead. There is absolutely no way you can control the weather, so there is absolutely no way you can control spray drift. This is an ongoing activity that we will be subject to several times throughout each year for the next 8 to 10 years, and that's before they start with the myriad of chemicals that will be sprayed on the bushes and fruits when they finally produce. No matter, Council, where your legal impending legal advice leads you, I implore each of you to consider what I've just said and also what I'm about to say, particularly when the topic of buffer zones comes up, please. There's a large number of chemicals being sold for use in this particular farming industry, which is not to say that all of them are used by all of the farmers. And even though they may be approved by APVMA, it doesn't lessen the toxicity and potential harmfulness to any life form, and that's even if they're used per the instruction. I know you say that chemicals are the jurisdiction of EPA, but I feel you need to know more about them and why we need really decent distant buffer zones. I'm going to mention just two chemicals, both of which are sold in our rural store, to help you see my point. Danadin Progress is a poison, with dimethylate being the active constituent. It's an organophosphate banned in at least India and Europe. And in fact, France bans the importation of fruit from countries that use dimethylate to grow the fruit. As of the 19th September 2023, the APVMA suspended the registration and labels of chemical products containing dimethylate used as a post-harvest dip for fruit with an inedible peel due to potential risks of human health. Diazinon, a relatively new chemical added to our local market, is also a poison. It is a Group 1B insecticide, which according to the Australian IPM guidelines for grains, means it also is an organophosphate. Residential uses of diazinon were outlawed in the US in 2004 because of human health risks. The USA National Pesticide Center found diazinon is harmful to humans and dogs if swallowed. It is very highly toxic to birds, bees, and most other insects. And studies show that diazinon is moderately toxic to fish and amphibians and only slightly toxic to earthworms. According to the Los Angeles Times, it is banned in 58 countries. So no matter whether the APVMA tells us it is safe to use, I would regard the news that 58 countries have banned it tells us a truer and scarier picture. Definitely something to think about. In 2015, the International Agency for Research on Cancer reclassified diazinon as a Group 2A, probably carcinogenic to humans, and in North America, there have been concerns for over 20 years. It has been banned for use on golf courses and sod farms since 1988 after decimating congregating bird flocks. Sue Higginson has recently been quoted in the news as saying, "There are 12 agricultural chemicals in use in Australia today that have been banned in most other countries due to their known harmful impacts on people and the environment." The Australian Pesticide and Veterinary Medicines Authority is really asleep at the wheel and must act to ensure that these chemicals are no longer available for use in Australia. And she goes on to talk about spray drift. If you Google her, you'll find this article if you want to read it. The hard science has long been available. Our global society is toxic, autoimmune systems of people worldwide are struggling, and many diseases have rapidly arisen and are rapidly increasing in the last decades. It is now so difficult to regulate the immune system. We need better information to make choices to lead healthier lives. And for Marcel and myself, Louise over at Yungay, David over at Smith's Lane, and anyone else who lives with a blueberry farm right next door, all within spray distance, and that's all you guys in Yutungan, because we live just over there, we're having our choices taken away from us by governments who are too lax with chemical laws. Councils who fail to enforce safe distance buffer zones, and farmers who continue to use such harmful chemicals just to mention a few. On top of this, the science is there. Trauma experiences contribute hugely to autoimmune conditions. Many, many people in this valley experienced the November 2019 fires in very traumatic ways. For most of us who have new neighbours move in and start to farm the food that they believe requires thousands of kilos of chemicals per year for up to 10 years is a trauma in itself. This is a stressful life for us. It is beyond crucial for human health and animal, land and water and all the others that I haven't gotten into, that we do everything that we can to have less toxins in our environment, not to allow more for nothing other than financial gain. According to the DPI publication Prime Fact 133, per hectare, some 149.9 kilos of chemicals are applied every year. Now, the breakdown of that is foliar applications have to be applied 26 times a year at 59.2 kilograms or litres, depending on whether it's a powder or a liquid. Insect control has to be applied 27 times a year, 37.5 kilos or litres. Fungicides are applied 23 times a year, 24.2 kilos or litres. Weed control, 6 times a year at 19 kilos or per litre. Don't forget, that's per hectare. In my opinion, I think this quite clearly furthers the case for good buffer zones. If you, our elected council and staff, look at these statistics and seriously think about them, that's 5,996 kilos of chemicals per year on the farm opposite me, just over there from Yatungan. So for the waterways,
I'm required as a resolution of council for an extension of time.
And she's been really good.
I did it to the other speakers. The only exception I made was when we interrupted a speaker for several minutes while we had some technical difficulties. Those are the rules. It's code of meeting practice, which under legislation I'm required to apply. So please be respectful and abide by the rules. Thank you.
So since that was mid-sentence, I'm going to bore you with that statistic again.
Yes, please.
5,996 kilos or litres of chemicals is going to go on the property over the road where Marcel and I live, just over there in Yarrumbella. That's not going to be good for the environment. It certainly won't be good for the waterways and that property floods, which I'm sure I've told you before. It's not going to be good for aquatic life, birds, insects. And it certainly is not going to be good for me, not for myself, not for our dog. I have a folder here full of chemical stuff and news articles that are printed from around the world, infringements from in Australia. If anybody on council would like access to it, and anyone else, please ask me. Thank you.
Councillors, are there any questions for Ms. Maggie? No? Thank you all. Councillors, that completes public forums. And before we go to the formal reports in the business paper, may I again thank the not only the current committee of management, but as I think was quite eloquently pointed out, there's been 100 years or more of volunteers looking after this facility. Dare I say the only reason it's still here is because of all those years of volunteering. Further, the only reason probably that it's in the condition that it's in is as a result of those volunteers. And I know that over the years there have been many families and many people who've held positions and given their time and effort. But to all of those people,
My name is Johnson's. Oh, I just brought a copy. I know Mr. Johnson's up there, the last trustee for the reserves, but yeah, you wouldn't have this facility, and it's like a lot of community halls. They wouldn't exist if the council actually had paid staff award wage rates to do the work that all of you do. So not only does the council appreciate it, the broader community does, because they reap the benefits of your hard work without having to pay a huge rates increase to pay your wages. So thank you. Trust me, I should have just grumbled. I'll put the lid on the water bottle just in case. All right, questions with notice? I believe there aren't any, or questions for closed meeting? None? We'll go straight to the General Manager's report, page and ID of the business paper. Moved Councillor Angel, seconded Councillor Vance. Any discussion? I do have one query. It's in relation to the plan of management for Wellington Drive. That's dealing with, and by the look of it, it's Crown Lands. For everything's been done, completed, and it's been sent to us for approval, but it's something like 4 months. Have we heard any feedback, or if I may, through the general manager, ask the project staff, or is there an issue with it?
I'll refer the question to the officer.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The latest update I have is as at 12th of March, and that's Landsfest, who were engaged to review the plan. They've addressed the latest concerns raised by the Department of Planning, Housing and Infrastructure in Crown Lands, and as such have resubmitted the plan of management for ministerial review.
Okay, thank you. So hopefully that will be finalised. So that covers quite a few areas, and I believe the caravan, the way across. Is it? Yeah. Thank you. Is there any, does anyone else have any questions? Councillors, none? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Go to page 33, item 10.1. Moved Councillor Angel, seconded Councillor Buchanan. Is there any discussion? None? Those in favour? Against? Carried. Page 35, item 10.2. Moved Councillor Buchanan, seconded Councillor Angel. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? Carried. Page 37, item 10.3. I don't know if anyone else is having the same issue. My device just, my business page just shut down on me. Yeah, you haven't got my notes. Move Councillor Vance. Sorry, I'll just go back to the page. All right, and get my annotations back, hopefully. It was moved, Councillor Vance. Did you have a seconder? Seconded, Councillor Martin Ballagary. Is there any discussion?
No.
Councillor Angel.
Just on the donations program, I'm not sure who we talked to by the council here, but is it It's been $500 as a maximum for quite some time for these community groups. Is it worth looking internally to go an extra $100, considering cost of materials, working on buildings like this? Is there some sort of review we have on this at all?
I think the time to probably, what you really need to consider is, and from memory, when the policy was developed, it actually states that there's $500 cap. Mm. But the reason for it was based on the number of requests, the average number of requests we get each year. But the key is, under legislation, you have to have a budget item for donations, and it has to be part of an approved and adopted program. So the real key is how much money the council allocates in the budget. In other words, if you want to increase the cap to say $600, you would more or less have to consider increasing the budget allocation for donations, because otherwise, and you've only got to look at this list, you can see that most organisations seek the maximum amount. So all it's going to do is mean less people get a donation. So does that make sense? And we are, we will shortly be commencing preparation of the next budget.
Through the general manager to the director of corporate services, did we exhaust all that last year? Our budget? I don't have a director of finances, yet. Do you know if we exhausted that whole budget of operation?
Currently, in the report, it says that there is a small amount left. Last point, we are not back. If I may, Councillor Angie. Two things we can do. One, we can look at the overall total in the budget workshop that we've got planned coming up in April, so that the bucket of money, if you like, is bigger for the next financial year. The other thing is, because it's a policy of council, that has to be reviewed and resolved to be adopted by council again. And as you know, all those policies have to be reviewed after the new council is elected in September. So I would propose we don't do it now. We can put it in front of the queue of the policies to be reviewed. Keeping in mind, we'll make sure we want to get the budget sorted so that the money's there if you do increase the cap.
Could we take it on notice just to have a look at the exhaust last 2 years?
Could I make an additional comment there, if I may, in response to Councillor Angel? The list that we have in front of us is a list as a result of application. So if the council votes in favour in a couple of minutes' time, this list is done. But personally, I would speak against doing a list that exhausts the entire donations budget, because there will be things that come up during the financial year that there will be requests for donations from council that are not on this list. So if you balance the books with this list for the entire year, and then you're stuck as councillors when halfway through the year someone comes to you, a community group comes to you, something happens and they need a donation and it's got great merit, but you've exhausted your budget. So I would always sort of speak in favour of leaving a little bit of money still in that budget unallocated. Obviously, as you're getting towards the end of the year, or if you find at the end of the year there's a large amount left, then you might want to increase it or give more. But I would always speak against allocating at this stage with this, because we do this list every year. I would speak against allocating virtually everything that's in that donations budget at this point in time, because it leaves us nowhere to go. Is there any other discussion or any other questions? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 42, item 10.4. Move Councillor Jones. Seconded Councillor Buchanan. Any discussion? I had a couple of questions. I was just curious as to why, with land acquisitions, valuations wouldn't, all valuations would have been reported to council with a proposal to acquire land. The reason I ask that is that for me personally, if the staff were recommending that we purchase some land, obviously it would be enclosed meeting, but if they were recommending we were purchasing some land for a particular price, I would want to see the valuations. And I have a suspicion that other councillors would have the same thought. Because if you haven't got the valuation, how do you know that the price that's being suggested that we pay is actually fair and reasonable? So is there any reason why, or any reason why it couldn't be amended? Is there some legislative reason or anything in the regulations?
I'll take the question. Thank you, Madam Mayor. Look, I'm not aware of anything the legislation says it can't go to council. It's a bit of a cart and horse situation. Do you have a discussion with the landowner prior to bringing it to council? Because at that point, you need to have those valuations done so that those discussions can occur. And then you go to council for the with the proposal for the resolution to acquire that land. I will take it on notice because I'll need to check that what I'm saying from a regulatory point of view is correct, but I don't see any reason why that report to council could not include the valuation. There would normally only be one valuation if that's agreed by both parties.
Thank you. I wasn't suggesting a restriction on getting a valuation and being able to negotiate it, but I think we're all aware that under Section 377 of the Local Government Act, only the council can make the decision to purchase land. It cannot be delegated to staff. So all of that work can be done, the valuations, discussing it with the landowner, but ultimately the staff have to put to council a recommendation to purchase for this amount. All I'm saying is I can't see any logical reason why, when that recommendation is made for that amount, the report could not include the attachment of the valuation. Well, in that case, you were the mover?
Yeah.
So the mover of the motion is altering his original motion that we defer this item.
This was the next meeting.
The next meeting. Is the seconder in agreement? Thank you, Councillor Buchanan, because the other thing I thought that was a little bit odd, we have a policy on purchasing land. All of the same regulations and Section 377 also applies to sale of land. I looked at this and thought, why do we not have a policy on the purchase and sale of land? So I think there's a few more questions that other councillors may have, so perhaps they can get them to staff in the next week or so and have this matter come back. I'd speak in favour of the motion. So is there any other discussion on the motion to defer? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Thank you. Page 44, item 10.5. Move Councillor Angel. Seconded Councillor Vance. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? Parry, page 45, item 11.1. Moved Councillor Jones, seconded Councillor Vance. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? Carried. Page 47, item 11.2. Moved Councillor Angel, seconded Councillor Buchanan. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? Carried. Page 52, item 11.3. Moved Councillor Jones, seconded Councillor Vance. Any discussion? Those in favour? We've got a roll tonight. It's carried. Page 54, item 11.4.
I'll move that.
Moved Councillor Vance. Seconded Councillor Martin Ballengarry. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 56, item 11.5. Moved Councillor Angel. Seconded Councillor Buchanan. Any discussion? Those in favour? Against? Carried. Page 57, item 11.6. Moved Councillor Jones. Seconded Councillor Angel. Any discussion? Councillor Jones.
Just read that, I guess it's going to be a very important thing. Has there been an increase in the funds for party recently? I've asked for a general manager.
I think probably
11.46.
Well, 11.46.
11.46.
Well, yeah, I think you're on the line.
I wonder why the manager of the government department is doing
anything. I was wondering why we're going to find people over complying with it. Yeah. It's usually the non compliant stuff. Sorry, any discussion on item 11.6? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Page 58, item 11.7. Moved Councillor Jones. Seconded Councillor Martin Ballengarry. Any discussion? Councillor Jones.
If I could, I'm just curious because we do seem to have had more infringement notices for parking. In the proof where I don't know if it's been peak season, it's been tourist. I was just going to ask from the General Manager if it's been a policy shift or whether it's just been whether the range was just back on deck.
Well, answer the first part. No, there hasn't been a policy shift. There's probably been more effort. We did receive a large number of complaints over the season, in particular with illegal camping. So the fact that the rangers are out there enforcing that more regularly enables them to be also in parking space and I'll refer it to the manager development, but anecdotally, I think definitely that we have been issuing more fines.
Yes, through the General Manager, Councillor Jones, this report's from the January Rangers report, a higher increase in traffic during that period. We've had additional staff members do additional patrols for camping on beach, illegal camping, which is pretty up top for rangers to do other patrols, which raise increased problems in those areas.
Councillor Angel?
Do we set the tone for the dollar value of those roles? Is that the state most? What I'd ask is someone come to me about able to park backwards on the street, not in the side of a parking lot spot, but backwards. And I got charitable $20 but not facing the right way, so I put on a park in front of the house. But it actually got towed to the head. I just thought there's got to be more circumstances like that. I thought $320 for parking backwards in a parking spot was a bit harsh.
So you mean nose to curb rather than rear to curb or vice versa?
Rear to curb, yeah. You yeah, actually dropped it by a tow. Regardless of that, I think $320 to park it backwards.
Through the general manager, Councillor Angel, no, we don't get to set it, through the regulation, through the road rule. We did get the option a couple of years ago to reduce our parking fines, so we opted in to that. So we've got a reduced parking fines for our shire, but across all parking fines. That doesn't apply to other fines under other pieces of legislation, but for parking, we do have a reduced compared to other areas.
Thank you. And of course, on the back of the fine, there will be some information. If someone thinks there are special circumstances that the car, for example, was dropped off by a tow truck and they've dropped it back to front, and you've got otherwise a good record and not 10 other outstanding parking fines, there is the option to seek a review and explain circumstances, which usually ends up with a warning if you have a good record and a reasonable or an acceptable excuse. Thank you. Any other questions or queries? None? Those in favour? Against? Carry. Page 65, item 12.1. Moved Councillor Vance. Seconded Councillor Martin Ballard. Any discussion? Councillor Vance.
Madam Mayor, I chair this committee and I'm very proud of the people that are on it. And we've just received a significant grant to increase accessibility to the beaches, and not only for cars but pedestrians as well. So I think it's in the vicinity of 300,000 plus a contribution from the vehicle access fees of $80,000. So, and we are improving signage along there as well. So I'd like to thank the people on the committee.
Thank you. And when you chair the next meeting, please pass on the council's appreciation for their efforts. That's a pretty sizable grant, and I suspect it'll. There'll be a little bit of both in there. There'll be some environmental work too to ensure that those access tracks are maintained. If it's all maintained track, it stops people from creating their own little, and you end up with lots of areas of access and erosion, which is something that a lot of people in the community get upset about as well. So well done. Okay, no other discussions on features access? No? Those in favour? Against? It's carried. Well, the only item that we have left, councillors, is an item for closed meeting, and you will have read your business paper and realise that there's only one item in close, and it's the standard report matters regarding realised or potential losses. And given the circumstances of being in a rural hall and meeting the requirements of closing in, I'm going to move that we defer that to the next meeting. Seconded Councillor Vance. As I indicated, those who have read it will see there is, in my view, nothing in there that requires immediate attention. And because of the building, we can't meet closing meeting requirements. So those in favour? Against? It's carried. And in that case, there being no further business, I will thank everyone for their attendance and their courtesy, and declare the meeting closed. And I'd also like to just remind councillors, and I believe a lot of staff will be attending as well, the council creditors service commences at 11 a.m. at the Catholic Church in Maxwell tomorrow. And I would suggest that If you wish to attend, you get there early, because I suspect it's going to be a very large service, so you'll be facing a long walk. It's probably easier to park at council and walk in some respects. But anyway, thank you everyone. Good night.